All right. Welcome, my friend. So we are on Chaf Aleph Amud Aleph. That is 21A. And if you weren't with us last time, we started the second perek. We are in chapter two of Maseches Sukkah. So again, that's a significant milestone. Someone will have to calculate for me, but I think we've already completed roughly a third of the Masechta, maybe even more than a third of the Masechta. If someone as I told you, I didn't do well on Daf Ches because of all the mathematics, but 56 blot, and we did over 20. That's over one third of the Masechta, right? Someone correct me if my math is wrong. Okay, significant accomplishment. All right. Previously in our Gemara shiur, what we established was that Rabbi Yehuda and the Chachamim have a machlokas when it comes to an ohel. So, as we're probably familiar, but if you're not, it was worth coming tonight to find out that one of the ways to transfer tumas mace that when there's a dead body is through an ohel. And anyone here who is a kohen is probably intimately aware of how complicated that can make life, especially when you want to attend a funeral. And it could be even of a relative, depending which relative, right? And it could be of a friend, and it can be very difficult to participate. So the question is, though, can all material constitute an ohel? Is it all just anything that creates a roof? So Rabbi Yehuda has a unique shita. We're going to seriously qualify it by the end of this year. But as it stands where we left off, Rabbi Yehuda said that only an ohel that's made be de adam, that is made artificially, constitutes an ohel. And he derives that from a gezeira shava from the Mishkan. It uses the terminology of an ohel for the Mishkan, and the Mishkan was made by the hands of human beings. So we infer the same way that the Mishkan was made by human beings, and that's what constitutes an ohel. We use that to limit which materials qualify to constitute an ohel when it comes to the laws of Tumah. And
So,
so,
Rabbi, what would be an ohel that's not made by man?
so we had a whole list of it on the bottom of Chaf Amud Beis. We had a basically any formation. Imagine a formation of rocks, like a cave or something. You know? Trees even, I guess, would technically qualify.
Well.
Yeah, anything that just grows naturally on its own. So, but you know, this is the Havamina right now. We're going to seriously qualify how far Rabbi Huda is willing to go with this in a moment. So here we're going to have one long extended question. Let me just tell you a little bit about it outside. We're going to cite a Mishnah from Parah. Ah, makes sense. We're going to be talking about a cow, Parah Aduma. So if you recall, the way to remove someone's tumas mace from being impure by contact some way with a cadaver is
Warm them a
by
little.
using, right, is using sprinkling the parah aduma from the red heifer. So imagine you are going to purify someone from the red heifer, and then one of the people involved was tame, and then he ruins everything. So because it is such a high stakes thing, they would actually, we're going to read it inside in a moment. Women would kind of gather in this tumah-free zone. They would give birth there. They would raise their children there. And then these children would eventually be the ones who went to draw the water that would be used for the sprinkling of the parah aduma. They went to a very extreme length. So you ever see someone who's super COVID conscious? And, you know, this is like beyond that. Sorry, just a moment. Got a little warm in here. Okay. Now, let's read inside, and we're going to see how this is going to present a question, again, a seemingly a contradiction within Rabbi Yehuda's Shita. So it's a bit of a long, it's a bit of a long, elongated question, but I don't think it's a complicated one. Is Sava Rabbi Yehuda kol ohel she'ena asoi bidei adam eino ohel? Is it really true that Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that anything that's not any ohel that's not made by a man does not constitute the category of an ohel vis-a-vis tumah? Or minhu chatzeros hayubanuyas b'Yerushalayim agabe hasela. Let me show you a picture. Do you have the pictures in the art scroll? They give you a picture of what this looks like? Ah, good. So I brought my Masifta Gemara tonight. This is very helpful for envisioning what it looks like. Let me see if we can pull up the right page over here. I'm even going to get you the color version that's in the back. Okay. Let's try and do this. Oh, one second. Let me have to remove the blur because now it's blurring the page. There we are. So you see this picture over here with the houses. And you see how these are, they're these, I don't even know what you would call them in English, but there's kind of like these ramps that have air gaps in between, and they're built upon a rock foundation. The concern is that there's something called, we're going to see in a moment, Kever HaTehom, that there could be people buried under there for a long time that we're not aware of. And if you're living there, you're becoming Tamei Meis. So the idea is that these air gaps built in the foundation on top of that, basically, if there was Tumah, they would then create an ohel and it would be chotzeit. They would impede the Tumah from going any further up to affect the people who are on the surface. That makes sense? Okay. So what's happening here is ubros, they would bring pregnant women. You know what this reminds me of? Because I enjoy watching videos about like speculative cosmology and space travel. So like they have these discussions about if we ever wanted to reach Proxima Centauri, which is the closest star system. Anyone know how close the closest star system is to us? For about 4 light years. So that means I forgot how long it would take us by our technology, but it would take generations to get to Alpha Centauri. So one of the theoretical ways of getting there was to build a ship that basically you would have like plants and it would be self-sustaining bio environment that generation after generation would be able to train the next one, and eventually they would make it to the Alpha Centauri star system, where there is apparently one of the stars there. I think it's a red dwarf. They found a planet in its habitable zone, which could be like, you know, once we mess up our own planet over here with the environment, maybe we'd have somewhere else to go. So this kind of reminded me of that, just like the amount of sacrifice that they're doing here. These women would basically move to this area. They would come while they're pregnant. They would give birth there, umigados beinehem sham, and they would raise their children there, right? They're like, their children would never leave. Like they would stay within whatever this area was. Utinokos yoshin al gabehen, and then what? Vayhi hayom, when it was their turn, they would. Don't worry, it's not a child sacrifice. I know it sounds like it's leading up to that. The children would then, they would take a ride on the cows. Bekosa shel even bidehem. They would have these receptacles, these cups made out of stone, because stone would not be mekabel tumah. Ki gilu shiluach, when they got to the, I think it's the same place they would draw the mei shiluach for the. For the water ceremony, the base for the Beis HaShoeva, Simchas Beis HaShoeva on Sukkos. So when they got there, Yardu L'soch HaMayim, they would then, the children would descend into the water. Apparently, they have to learn how to swim also at the same time. Umilum, and they would fill up the water. Va'alu V'yashlam, and then they would get back up on these cows, and the cows would bring them back, and these children would have fulfilled their destiny. And now they can help people out. That's like an extreme level of dedication. Rabbi Yossi Omer, Nimkomo, actually, they would have the stone receptacles, almost like when you're going fishing, be attached to a string, and they would throw it off and they would pick it back up. And why are we doing all these precautions? We make kever hatahom. We raise them somewhere that is safe, that's quarantined from Tumah. And when they go, when their final day comes and they're supposed to draw the water, they then ride on these cows that basically the cows are big enough that the cow operates as an ohel, that if there's any tumah under it, these small children who are on the cows will be protected from any tumah that might be below them. And Rabbi Yehuda Omer, sorry, I didn't explain one thing. So what they would do actually is there was basically a debate whether they would be riding on boards that were on top of the cows or whether they rode directly on the cows themselves. So Rahuda says they wouldn't ride on a board on top of the cow, but they would ride on the cow itself. I'll show you a picture just to help you visualize it. Even though I'm sure you can imagine what a board looks like on a cow, but just in case. Kid would be riding on a huge plank on top of the cow, which would serve as an ohel. Rahuda, however, says that you do not use the plank. Again, this is just like amazing to think about how all this took place. Rabbi Huda says that they would ride directly on the cows. Ki asa Rabdini or Oh, sorry. So what's the question over here? The question is, Bahashvarim to all Shina asa vide adam hu. Uktani Rabbi Huda Omer, el. But wait a minute. How can Rabbi Huda say that we can rely on a cow interposing between the child and any potential graves that they walk over? The cow cannot constitute an ohel because Rabbi Yehuda, an ohel has to be man-made. It can't be naturally made. The cow is not considered man-made. That'd be interesting. What if we artificially grew a cow? Would that be considered artificially made? Right? All sorts of modern-day science and halakha questions that you can ask. So the question, Rabbi Yehuda, is how can this measure of using the cow to interpose between a kid and the potential tumah work if he holds that the cow does not count because it is not an artificial ohel? Do we have the question? Any questions on the question? All right, that was a long-winded question. You see, I told you it wasn't the worst. It wasn't the worst. So he asked the Rabbi Yehuda Kamali Egrov. We're going to seriously qualify what Rabbi Yehuda says. Rabbi Yehuda basically says, when is it that a natural ohel is not an ohel for in regards to the laws of tumah? When it's only a tefach. But if it's kamali egrov, if it's the size of a fist. Now, whose fist are we talking about? Rashi says that we're talking about the fist of Ben Avtiach, and Ben Avtiach's his fist was v'yeshno kerosh gadol shel adam. His fist is as big as a person's head. If you have an airspace that's as big as this huge fist, the space of a big person's head, then that would be sufficiently big enough that even an artif not sorry, even a naturally made ohel would be sufficient to constitute a categorical ohel vis-a-vis the laws of tumah. And so there is certainly more airspace than this egrov between the ground and between the stomach of the cow. And so therefore, the cow, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, could constitute an ohel. Because his whole big distinction really is just a distinction when we're talking about a small amount of airspace, but not when we have an egrov or more of airspace. That's how we resolve Rabbi Yehuda. And that's why basically, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, it wouldn't help if you own a cemetery and there's a tree and there's leaves and it makes an ohel, even according to Rabbi Yehuda. Even though the tree's natural, there's a lot of airspace there, it's still going to be a problem, even if, in theory, if we went with Rabbi Yehuda on this. Okay, that is the answer. Now, let me ask you a question. I think that this is where I apologize and say that I was stuck in a lot of rush hour traffic and I didn't get to look too deeply into it. But Tosvos brings up something really fascinating. So, there's a note of Yehuda, the tshuva of the note of Yehuda about umbrellas on Shabbos. The main contention against an umbrella on Shabbos is that when you open it, you are creating an ohel. You're creating a tent, and that is that's an act of binyan, and that, of course, is one of the 39 melachos. So, in the note of Yehuda, he reckons with this concept called an ohel zara, that when you have an ohel that is on the move, a portable ohel does not constitute an ohel. And so one of the considerations that maybe an umbrella, walking with your umbrella is not going to be an issue, is if this is a movable ohel, then maybe for halachic purposes, we don't call it an ohel. It's a tent, but it's not really an ohel categorically as far as halacha is concerned. And maybe that'd be one of the considerations to be okay with umbrellas on Shabbos. So Tosos, I'll just read for you the relevant line. Tosos asks over here, and I believe the note of Yehuda actually cites this Tosos in his tshuva. Now you might ask the following question. Forget about natural, forget about artificial. The cow is on the move. The cow is not a tree. The cow is not a house. The cow is constantly on the move. Isn't that called an Ohel Zarach? Isn't that a movable Ohel? So if the whole point is, right, usually we don't want things to be an Ohel, right? Because something's an Ohel, then usually it transfers Tumah. But also what an Ohel does is it stops Tumah from going any further. So we actually want the animal to constitute an Ohel. But since it's a movable Ohel, it shouldn't count. So what does Tosos say? Very fascinating answer. Mikol makom b'dihu gali rachmana d'chashivi Ohel. We learn it from a pasuk in Eov. In Eov, I don't know the context, I have to look there, but it says, with bones and with sinews, if that's the right translation of Gidim, you have covered me. And so we see some sort of allusion in the verse in Eov that flesh can be considered a covering in halakha. And so it's true, a movable ohel would be problematic here, but apparently flesh, even on the move, is considered a legitimate ohel. A very fascinating answer of Tosos. Now, as you can imagine, coming back to the umbrella, this verse would not help when it comes to umbrellas, because umbrellas, I would imagine, would be pretty nasty if they were made of flesh, right? I mean, I don't know. We make all sorts of things out of leather, honestly, so I shouldn't make any assumptions. Maybe that'll be like Toby, that'll be like the new next thing in vogue in the five towns, like leather umbrellas or something, you know? I don't know, maybe that'll be like the next thing they sell at the boutique shops. Let us know the next time you go for a reconnaissance mission, okay? All right. So that was the pertinent thing I wanted to get from Tosos. And I think there's a very fascinating implications for a halacha lemaaseh sugya. Maybe the umbrella one is probably worthy of a shiur at some point. Okay, back into the Gemara. We're up to the words Vahari Delas. We are 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 lines up from the bottom. Vahari Delas the Ishba Kama Egrofin Ugetani Rabbi Yehuda Omer Lo Hayim Bevin Delas El Shvarim. So now I have another question, Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda seemed adamant that we do not put the children on these boars that are on top of the animal, but you can only put them directly on the cow themselves. But I have a question. Why not? If there is, even if the these dlusos are considered to be natural, if even if they're like naturally made, interesting assumption there, there's a lot of airspace still between the ground and between these planks that the kids are on. So why would Rabbi Yehuda, like, I understand Rabbi Yehuda might say
Okay.
you don't need the
I want
dlusos.
to do it coming up to eight.
Sorry? What was that, Phils?
No, I'm sorry. It's on.
Oh, okay. So, Amar Rabbi, Lahavi Dlatzos. Well, in Hachinami, that's the answer, is that Rabbi Yehuda is not saying that you need to do away with the Dlatzos. He's saying is that you don't need the Dlatzos. There's no need to go that far. However, Amar Rabba offers an alternative reading. He says, right, we have the different narratives. Remember, I talked about those over there Thursday this morning. We talked about how you hear about different narratives all the time. I'm like, the Gemara also gives us different narratives, right? It's cool and hip to learn Gemara as well. Rava Amar, Lo Hayim Mevi'in Dlatzos Kol Ikar. No, actually, Rabbi Yehuda said that you specifically cannot use these planks. Yitma. Because a child will get really comfortable on these planks, he'll start sticking his, like you ever see like a dog who sticks his head out the window in the car. So the kid's going to start sticking his head over the plank. He's going to get a little bit too comfortable. And then if he sticks his head out of outside the airspace of that plank, then he may very well become tame. And all those years that his mother and everyone put in all this work to make sure that he'd be pure of any chashash of tuma would have gone all out the window or all off the plank. But sorry, turning to page. Sorry, get to have the kever to home. Maybe he'll get that tuma. And in fact, Tanya Kavasi to Rav, we have a brace that supports Rava. Right? Who don't lo hay mevi dlasas kol ikar b'nation daito shaltino gasa love shema yoti rosho ach mevara ve yidma v'kemer to home. Literally everything we just read, that we're afraid he's going to stick his head outside the airspace of the plank. Ella mevi shuram ha mitzrim, rather we bring the Egyptian oxen. Shekresos sein rachavos. Apparently they have very big stomachs. But you know goes the yoshvin al gabehen. And that way, the children would sit on top of it, and their big bellies would interposed between potential tumah and the children. Because and then the children would go down with their cups of stone, and they would felt the water, and they would come back and shalom al Yisrael. So, okay, very fascinating. So we had in summation, we had a discussion about tumah and tahara tonight. We learned that except for a very small subset of cases, even according to Rabbi Yehuda, a natural ohel will constitute an ohel as long as it's an egro for more. And we also discussed how far they had to go in order to protect themselves and ensure that the entire process of purifying dead did not result in more tumah being spread. And we also learned about a little bit about some of the concerns of whether you can use an umbrella on Shabbos. I think in any event, anyone who hold opening the umbrella would be an issue in all likelihood. But the question is, if it was already open, would it be an ohel? Would it be an ohel zarah? So worthy of a shiurim to itself, but we touched on a little bit of halacha lemaisa. Any questions? All right, my friends, we will be away for Friday through Sunday. So there's still no Sunday shiur, as I sent out an email a while ago, until January. So wishing everyone a good Shabbos and a merry holiday weekend, whatever holiday it might be. Toby, yes.
Just on that scheduling issue, so there's nothing this Sunday, but next Sunday is technically still December.
You ask a good question, Toby. What was my thinking not to do next Sunday? Oh, 31st. Oh, I see. Let me get back to you on that. Let me get
Okay.
back to you. I think it should be fine for sheer. I think it should be fine. Yeah. Okay, good catch. You're right. It's the 31st. Now you think of that. I'll get back to you on that. Okay.
Thank you.
All right, good Shabbos, everybody. Take care.
Thomas.
Thank you. Good job.